Welcome to a Veterans Podcast, powered by Wisconsin Veterans Network, the show where we hear unique, inspiring stories from veterans all over. Veterans who've transitioned, who've overcome obstacles, and even those still struggling. We will learn all veterans have a unique story, ones filled with pain and triumphs, and we will learn no veteran is alone, no matter the path they took. We share their stories to help motivate and inspire the world, to help understand what it means to be a veteran, and most of all, we share to give them a voice amongst the noise. You can find us at aveteranspodcast.com to learn more and how you can be a part of the show. Welcome back to A Veterans Podcast, everybody. I'm so glad you're here. I am recording from home today, so hopefully everything sounds good. Our producer's pretty legit, so I think we'll get it all figured out. But anyways, welcome back. It's starting to warm up, which is super exciting because this weather was crazy and we got a million inches of snow. But I'm glad you're here today. We have really great guests today. We have two guests. It's a married couple. The Fransteds are going to be on today. They both served in the Navy, and they were both officers, so I'm really excited for them to tell their story. I found them on LinkedIn, just kind of scrolling around and seeing what's out there. So, I don't know anything about their story, to be completely honest. So I'm excited to have them today. And just as a reminder, today's show is sponsored by Wisconsin Veterans Network, an established Wisconsin nonprofit ran by veterans for veterans. Their mission is to provide guidance and support for all veterans, whether Guard, Reserve, active, or even a bad discharge, looking for any kind of assistance in the state of Wisconsin. If you're a Wisconsin veteran looking for an answer, whether a simple question about benefits or are currently homeless, give them a call today. You can find out more about them on wisvetsnet.org or at aveteranspodcast.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at A Veterans Podcast. All right, let's give them a call.
Tara Fransted.
Welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you guys on. I honestly don't know much about your story except what I saw on that LinkedIn post when I reached out to your husband, that you guys served on the same ship that I was on years before you were on it. So that kind of caught my attention because I thought that was cool that you served on the USS Cowpens.
Yeah.
Very cool. So just want to jump into it. So you and your husband were both officers. And did you go like the ROTC route or did you didn't go to the academy,
so,
right?
No, neither of us went to the academy. So I'll tell you what I did and then Matt can tell you what he did. We did different things. So I did ROTC. I knew hold on, we're trying to decide if we should conference in so we can both, instead of just being on one phone.
Oh, okay.
Can you do that or?
I think I can. If you just hang on,
perfect.
All right. So now I have both of you on. This is lovely. Okay. So how did you become naval officers?
So I did ROTC. I knew starting, I think I must have been 16 or 17 that I wanted to go into the military. And I did tour the academies, but I didn't end up going to one. I went to Villanova University just outside of Philadelphia. And before I started, I got an ROTC scholarship. And I did my 4 years through ROTC and then got my commission.
Awesome. And what about you, Matt?
So for me, I had looked into doing ROTC and actually got an ROTC scholarship out of high school, but it wasn't to the high school I was looking to go to. So I ended up going to Texas A&M, and if you're in ROTC and you go to A&M, you have to be in the Corps of Cadets there. And when my scholarship fell through, I still joined the Corps of Cadets. So it was kind of like being in ROTC. And then the summer before my junior year, I found out about a contract called NUPOC, which is Nuclear Propulsion Officer Candidate. And essentially, they enlist you and pay you to go to school, and then afterwards, you get to go to OCS.
Oh, cool.
So I ended up doing 2.5 years enlisted, technically, then went to OCS. But I also got the ROTC experience. So I like to joke that I've been through 2 of the 3 commissioning routes.
Oh, that's very fancy.
And so I joked with Kara. I joked with Kara about getting a job at the Naval Academy just so I could make it through all 3.
There you go. That's awesome. So did you guys then meet on the ship, or how did you guys end up meeting?
We did. I actually, I showed up to, so our first ship on the Cowpens was in Japan, and I think I showed up to Japan like 4 or 5 days after Kara, and she, I guess, got sent looking for me at one point.
Oh.
Kara, I was waiting for you to weigh in there.
Oh, I was not, sorry, I was on mute. I didn't realize I was on mute. So yeah, Matt, I guess, had a horrible flight over and then slept for 24 hours or something like that. And he didn't show up for muster in the morning. And in Japan, the officers only have to show up and like, okay, you're here, you're alive. And then you're dismissed basically if your ship's not there. So he didn't show up, and the ship got in contact with me and said, he didn't show up. We can't find him. We don't know where he is. We don't know if he landed. So I ended up finding him on another floor at the Navy Lodge. And that's how we met originally. And then we were stationed, you know, on the same ship for a while. And we were really good friends, and we had no interest in dating.
Well, I mean, that's good, I suppose. It's good to be friends first, you know. And
yeah,
it's always weird on the ship anyways. At least that's how I felt. I mean, my experience was a little different because I was enlisted, but, you know, it's just weird. Everybody's like your family for a while there, you know, I don't know. At least that's how I felt. okay. So we kind of talked about how, you both joined, and was the Navy the branch that both of you wanted to be in, or was that just by default because of the ROTC programs, or what made you choose Navy?
I definitely wanted to be in the Navy. I had looked at originally when I was, you know, thinking about joining the military, I thought I wanted to be a pilot. So I immediately thought Air Force. And then when I did a lot of research about the Air Force and I went to go visit the Air Force Academy, it turns out that you don't actually do a lot of flying in the Air Force. So like there's a lot of, most people don't actually become pilots in the Air Force.
Hmm.
And you could get stuck in like a missile bunker in, you know, North Dakota or something. And I was like, I really don't want to do that. So I wanted to travel and see the world and, you know, do all those other things. So I thought, you know, even if I was just on a ship and I didn't end up flying, then it would still be cool to go see the world. So I decided to go Navy instead.
Nice. And what about
yeah,
you?
Yeah, and for me, my degree was in nuclear engineering, and I wanted to use that. And I guess for me, the Navy had been really the only option of, hey, this is how you use that degree. So mm-hmm. for me, you know, even out of high school, I had decided to go Navy.
Well, you both picked the best branch, so that's outstanding. we've had a lot of Army people on the podcast, so I always give them a hard time. And then I had to eat my words when we lost against the Army in the football game, but that's besides the point.
Yeah.
It's always a painful thing. Don't ever wager on that game. I've learned the hard way. So,
oh yeah, for sure.
So both of you joined after September 11th, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And so did that have any impact on your service, or where were you that day? Like, how did that impact your service moving forward?
So I'm from the DC area, and I, the day of, I saw the smoke from the Pentagon, so it had a huge effect on me. I was in school in Virginia at the time, but I lived in Maryland, and we had to cross the bridge to get back and forth. So that day, my parents picked me up, and when we were driving across the bridge, you could see the smoke rising from the Pentagon. Wow. So it had a huge, huge impact on me. And even though I was still in school, you know, I definitely didn't, I don't think I knew that I wanted to like serve in the military at that point, mm-hmm. but I do remember feeling like I need to do something about this.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for me, I think I was in, 6th or 7th grade and didn't, you know, I was out of Texas, so not in DC and not anywhere near it really, but, I think it did have a big impact on my desire to serve. Both my grandfathers were in the military. My dad's dad was actually a paratrooper in World War II.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, I'd heard some of his stories growing up. So I think there had always kind of been a desire there, and the events of 9/11 kind of, I guess, brought it to the forefront, mm-hmm. Especially on the cusp of high school. You know, nowadays you have to start looking at colleges basically when you're in kindergarten.
Yeah.
so even back then it was, you know, a thought, never so much. I never looked at the service academies or anything like that. But I had always thought maybe this is something I should do.
That's cool. So I do have a question that's a little bit unrelated to like transitioning out of the military, but I'm curious because I remember being on a ship and when the ROTC, I think you're called cadets, right? Is that the right word? When you're like in the ROTC yeah. program, but you come to the ship for like the summer and you do like
yeah.
a summer.
Yeah. Yeah, I did though.
How did you feel about that? I'm just curious, like, is it like hyped up when you're in ROTC, or is it like this terrifying thing that you have to go do? Because everybody I met that came on our ship was really like, they were great. I mean, I had a good time teaching them and stuff, but I always wondered from your perspective, what would that be like?
For me, it was, and I think it was different for each person because I think, you know, you had more serious people who were more buttoned up. And I think that from an enlisted person's point of view too, you can tell who those mm-hmm. people are and, you know, which ones are more serious and which ones are just, you know, they're kind of soaking it all up. And I was always excited to go because it was like, I don't know, something new and different, you know, mm-hmm. like, it was always fun, you know, like you didn't have any responsibility. You didn't have any, like, you were just there to learn mm-hmm. and party and have a good time. And
emphasis
that was kind of it, you know, like, yeah, exactly. Like where, you know, I mean, we had lots of fun when we were JOs, but like you had responsibility as a JO. Mm-hmm. And I just remember knowing, being very cognizant of the fact that at some point I would have the responsibility of those people, but now I'm a midshipman and I don't have to have that responsibility. So I'm going to enjoy myself.
Nice. Yeah, we definitely had, you could tell the difference between the midshipmen who were there, like following the book by the rules, everything had to be a certain way kind of thing. And then the midshipmen who were like, this is awesome. Like, let me just live my yeah. best life for the next however many weeks. So that's cool.
Right.
That's cool.
I did have like a weird experience though, where the first midshipman cruise I did, the CO of that ship was the CO on Cowpens.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so that my first experience as a midshipman cruise became my CO when I was a JO. So it like, it came kind of full circle, and thankfully he didn't remember me, but it was pretty funny.
That's kind of cool.
It is a very small Navy.
Yeah, definitely. That's crazy. My first CO, of the Cowpens that I had actually worked below a friend of the family who was the CO of his former ship. So like he knew the friend of my family, and it was strange, very small Navy, but that's cool.
Very.
Okay. So why did you both choose to get out of the military, or was it your choice? And kind of take me through that process.
So I had kind of thought by the time I got to about 4 years that we were married at the time, and we had been 2 years kind of on opposite sides of the world. We didn't really get co-located just because of the different things we were doing. So by that point, I wanted to start a family. And I have had really great female mentors in the Navy who have had children and made it work and figured it out and all that kind of stuff. And I just saw what they went through to make that happen, and just realized that I didn't want to go through that. And I wanted more flexibility was really what I wanted.
Yeah.
And in the Navy, as you know, there just isn't any.
No,
you know, you
at all.
Go where they tell you, and you know, you do what you have to do. And I mean, I know somebody who, she and I had a baby around the same time, and she 6 months later had to go to a school on the other side of the country for 6 months. And her husband was also in the Navy, and he was doing workups. So that child was in daycare for, and they didn't have any family around. So that child was in daycare. The 6-month-old child was in daycare from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. at night for 6 months.
Oh,
and that's how they made it work.
Yeah.
But it's not what I wanted to do.
Yeah, for sure. That would be difficult. I can't even.
Yeah.
Imagine.
And I know it was tough for her, and it was just not, you know, not what I wanted to do and not something I was really interested in. So I did get out. I put in my paperwork and I got out. So yeah, it was my choice. And I don't know if you want to ask me about, do you want me to talk about my transition process or?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. So like.
So mine, Matt and I had very different processes.
Mm-hmm.
I had originally thought I wanted to go into finance after I got out, and I thought I'd work for, you know, one of the big firms, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 months before I got out of the Navy, I found out I was pregnant. So we had just gotten back from a 10-month deployment, and we were starting the training cycle, and or I guess we were right at the beginning of the training cycle, and found out I was pregnant with 3 months to go, and realized that I was going to have a hard time interviewing while pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of mentors that I had at the time told me that they will not hire you. They said, I know it's illegal, but they won't hire you if you're pregnant. So kind of
that's
like,
not
well,
very encouraging.
Yeah. Now what? So my mom actually has a financial company, and I didn't really want to do that whole, I'm going to go work with my mom kind of thing originally. And then she sort of laid this like trail of breadcrumbs towards her company, like, hey, this, you know, this might really work out for your family situation, and, you know, all this different kind of stuff, smart businesswoman that she is. And I ended up going to work with her. And honestly, it was the best decision I could have ever made. I'm now running the business, and, you know, we have a great time together. We have a great relationship. So everything sort of worked out, but definitely not in the way that I thought it was going to.
Yeah.
And I think so before that though, when I did my TAPS class and everything, I didn't really know what was out there. And I think every TAPS class, at least from what I understand, every TAPS class is pretty different.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know any of the resources that were out there. I didn't know of any of these programs that are out there. And Matt had a totally different experience where he got to do all this really cool stuff, but I just never heard about.
Oh, really? Because a majority of the people we interview have the same experience that you did in TAPS, that they didn't really learn a whole lot, or it was kind of like information overload, but not a lot of practicality with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Matt had a really different experience. We transitioned out in different places, but.
Mm-hmm. And what was your transition like, Matt?
Yeah, so after Kara got out, I was still on the carrier working in reactor department, which for those who have worked in reactor department on an aircraft carrier, it's miserable. Mm-hmm. You're in three section duty and the rest of the ship is an eight section. So even after when our oldest was born, right after Kara got out, we were trying to come out of the yard, and I was one of, I think, six qualified people. So they couldn't afford for me not to be there.
Oh, geez.
So I think I got a weekend off when our oldest was born. So we went through the yard period and then we got out of the yards and did workups. And then I think I left for deployment, when my oldest was like 7 or 8 months old, and I missed 6 months. So basically half of her life.
Yeah.
And when I got back, it was like, yeah, I think I'm done with that. Mm-hmm. So I did a shore tour, which I'm really happy I did a shore tour. I kind of lucked out where I ended up. There's a so if you don't know, the Navy owns 11 museums all over the country, and there's a centralized command that runs all those museums.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Down at the Navy Yard.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, most people don't, which is good for various reasons. But so anyway, I had it's an interesting command. The Navy employs about 300 archivists and historians who like have archives dating back to John Paul Jones and weapons from every war the U.S. has fought. So it's really an interesting group, but the command is mostly civilian. So mm-hmm. there's only, I think there's three, a couple 05s, 06s, and then a few enlisted people. And then the rest are all civilians. And so our director was a retired team star. And he understood, like, hey, for the JOs, this is their shore duty, and you're getting out after this. So go do whatever you need to do. As long as your job is done, go do what you need to do.
Oh, that's nice.
So, it was great. So I got to go to, there's tons of programs out there, and I'm sure that's part of what this is aimed at is, mm-hmm. What programs out there are worth doing.
Yeah.
And there's, especially in an area like D.C., I mean, there's just a ton of them. So I got to go and do a couple. I was able to get my PMP certification for free through one of the programs. I got to go to a bunch of different career fairs. I also found TAPS useless, but I think that's the nature of TAPS. But I was fortunate enough to get to do other things, right? Mm-hmm. And so I ended up... I ended up working for a great company as an engineering consultant, and I ended up in a great spot. But I think most people don't have the luxury of having a shore duty that, the admiral is understanding and wants you to go out and set yourself up for success.
Yeah, definitely. I think you definitely lucked out on that, which is awesome. So you said that you took advantage of a few programs. Do you remember the names of those? So if there's people listening who are either in the process of transitioning out or looking at possibilities.
Yeah, I have volunteered myself as the veteran director of veteran recruiting at my company, because I didn't have enough going on. I talked with a lot of So I talked with a lot of transitioning service members about these different programs. So the one I did where I got my PMP certification is through Syracuse University. It's called Onward to Opportunity. And I think it's Syracuse University Institute for Military and Veteran Families. I never remember the F. IVMF. So they offer certifications like the PMP, Lean Six Sigma, I think Green Belt, then a bunch of IT certifications. So like cybersecurity certifications, those kind of things. And they, so what they'll do is you go to a, it's almost like a TAPS class. So they have their own little, help you transition class, which definitely had some highlights in it, that made it more useful than a regular TAPS class. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of it, what they do is they will pay for you to get a certification. So they give you all the training materials. It's all online, so it's kind of self-paced. And then for things like the PMP, they'll pay for you to sit the exam.
Which is huge because it's totally free. Pretty expensive.
I think the exam is like somewhere between $300 and $400 to take.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, the fact that they give you the training, there's a bunch of, I think, organizations aimed at getting military veterans their PMP certification, but a lot of them cost money. Okay. This one was, you know, they gave you the access to the coursework for free. They gave you, they paid for your, to sit your exam, and they even paid for the first year of my membership to the Project Management Institute. So you know, I got my first year of membership free. So, I mean, that one is like, if you're interested in the PMP or, Lean Six Sigma or any sort of cyber IT type certifications, that one's definitely one to check out.
That's cool.
There's another one that, Deloitte does called Deloitte Core. So, again, it's a free, they have a week long version and a day long version. And even the single day long version was better than TAPS class. I mean, it was phenomenal. So I can only imagine that the week long version is pretty great too. Mm-hmm. And then I'm trying to think what other places I point people. Breakline Education is, if you haven't heard of them, they do a lot of technology world. So I think Facebook and Google and those kind of places, but a lot of lesser known ones too. They get a lot of buy-in from Silicon Valley.
Oh, wow.
So that one's a pretty cool program. I think that one requires an application. I'll let you know, but I've seen a lot of these, especially in the DMV. I mean, it's kind of hard to find these things, but there are so many organizations that want to do a program to get early access to try and hire the cream of the crop, right? So they want to get to veterans any way they can. A lot of this comes down to, you know, commands not being willing to let their soldiers or Marines go. Yeah. So they end up transitioning without a plan or transitioning without having gone through any sort of training or whatever, you know, because you're starting a new life. You need to take some step off. Yeah, that's a really long-winded answer. I'm lucky and ended up where I am, but yeah, definitely looked out. I had a great transition, but also, like, you know, since I had that, I try to give back to. So a lot of people I talk to, it's like, hey, have you heard of this program? Have you heard of this program? Like in Virginia, there is a program that gives free suits to transitioning service members who live in Virginia.
Oh,
so
that's
if
cool.
You're getting out of the military, you can get a free suit. Boost to Center. I can never remember the name, but so there are so many programs out there that offer, skills training or, you know, hey, get a free suit. Like, I mean, there's so many programs out there that the problem is they're just not well known or commands aren't willing to give you the time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely unless you really have a command that'll fight for you, sometimes that can be pretty difficult. So what were some mistakes, like looking back now, you realize like, oh, I probably shouldn't have done that, or you would have done differently for either of you? What were some of those like lessons learned and things that looking back on now you would have done differently?
Should I go first? I can go first.
Sure.
So I think the main thing I would have done differently is with the VA. I showed up to my VA medical examinations, mm-hmm. and you know, we started the process, and then, you know, they asked all the typical questions, and one of them was, are you pregnant? And I said yes, and they said, wait a minute, we can't do this exam while you're pregnant. And I was like, oh, okay. So I left, but they marked me as a no-show, and that went it, or whatever the VA terminology is. And after that, trying to go back and do any kind of medical exams with the VA was so difficult. Because for whatever reason, it looked like on my record that I didn't really care about the exams or something like that. I don't know. They were trying to explain it to me. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really follow up because I was pretty discouraged.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So a year went by, and, you know, 4 months after I had the baby, I tried again, and they said, we don't have any record of you applying or, you know, sending in your application or anything like that. And I was like, I have the paperwork, you know, I mean, I went through the whole song and dance, mm-hmm. and, you know, they were like, well, I guess we'll get back to you. So I didn't hear anything for another year, and I called them back. And anyways, we went on for about 5 years like this.
Oh my goodness.
When I finally found a friend, who transitioned out, told me that he had gone through, Wounded Warrior Project to get help for his VA claim.
Yes.
And he, told me to check them out. And so I went through them, mm-hmm. to get help with my claim, and they finally helped me get a full exam. You know, it had been so long since my transition, so there was not a lot that could be done, mm-hmm. Especially because the original exam was so messed up, but they still helped me get something.
Yeah.
So that was a cool resource, and I do wish that I had followed up with the VA from the beginning, but I just didn't know, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think so often when you are in the military, when people tell you something, you follow the rules, you do what they say or whatever. So if the VA is telling you like, we can't do this right now, you have to come back. You're going to be like, okay, then I guess I'll come back. But they don't tell you all the backstory that's going to go with it. And you're
right,
like,
exactly.
Oh, thank you for nothing. That's outstanding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's pretty much exactly what happened.
Yeah. And you know, it's different for women too. Going to the VA, because not every VA has a women's health clinic, and not every VA has,
right.
Which is wild to me at this point. Like, come on now. We're how many years since women started serving? But that's a whole nother podcast for another day.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's definitely the VA in itself is difficult to navigate. So I'm really happy to hear that you found support through Wounded Warrior Project. I think they do an incredible job getting people connected with the VA and kind of helping through all the red tape and all that kind of stuff. So that's really awesome to hear.
Yeah, for sure.
What about you, Matt?
So I don't know that there's much I would have done differently. I was very fortunate to have things work out in my favor.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that just came down to the command I was at. And there's nothing, you know, there's nothing anyone can really do. If you have a chance to go to the Naval History and Heritage Command, take it. but, you know, there's not a lot people can do to get that lucky,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I do realize I was fortunate. So I just try and tell people, hey, here's the knowledge I have, and here's what you can do to glean, you know, take that knowledge and try to use it for your own transition. Mm-hmm. It's things like Kara covered, you know, I think there's a tendency for service members to pretend everything's okay and not go to the doc or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you never go get seen about it, then the VA can't help you afterwards, right? So get everything on your medical record. And if you do nothing else, right, if you can't go to anything but CAPS class, and you can't go to career fairs and you can't do anything else, you can at least go see medical and get stuff on your record, because mm-hmm. that's really going to help you afterwards. And there are, you know, Kara went through the Wounded Warrior Project. I think I went through,
you went through AMVETS, DAV, I think.
Disabled veterans. Okay. There's tons of groups out there willing to help people.
Yeah,
as long as it's on your record, they can do a lot for you. So if you can't do anything else, right, just do that one thing.
Matt, did you find that watching your wife go through her transition out of the military kind of gave you things to do differently, or, you know, like focus on it differently than she did? Because I feel like she was kind of the guinea pig in the nicest way possible. Like, she did it first, and then you went back and, like, learned from her because women are superior. You know, all those things to boost women. But did you use any of that kind of to your advantage when you got out, because you saw her kind of maybe struggle through certain things or anything like that?
You know, I'm not sure. It's been so long since she transitioned out. Before I transitioned out, I say so long, like 3 years, but in the military, 3 years
yeah,
is basically
that is a long
forever.
Time.
yeah. So it had been so long. I don't think I, you know, remembered what she went through other than,
well, also,
you know,
he wasn't there.
Oh, that's,
yeah, well, there is that too. That, I was on deployment for part of it and then doing workups for the other part. So
yeah,
there is that.
I mean, like he said about that, if you're in reactor department, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he was not, I saw him once a week, maybe, and he slept during most of it. So that part, you know, and, you know, when you see your spouse like going, you know, under a lot of stress, I just sort of let him sleep. And that's another thing I would say that I wish I had leaned on him more for support, but I did the whole, like, you know, he's busy and he's stressed and I am woman and I can do this. And
I feel that.
You know, it's probably more stressful for me that way than if I had shared my journey with him. But, you know, I mean, like, you know, when you're in workups and you're just, you know, and then at the end getting ready to deploy, it was just like,
yeah, there's no,
you know, you don't
time.
Have any time for any of that.
Yeah. Never. That's interesting. I think, so you guys are our first, like, dual military couple that we've actually been able to talk to both people. So it's cool to hear that, though, because I think even the service members or veterans that we've talked to still don't lean on their spouse when they're getting out, because they're so used to doing everything on their own. And they've done their career on their own, so they're going to do this transition on their own. And not that you guys struggled with it, but a lot of veterans do struggle with that because their spouse is trying to help or whatever the case may be. But I'm glad you pointed that out, because I may or may not have gone through the same thing. It's fine. I'm okay now. So if you had one piece of advice that you could share with somebody who is preparing to get out of the military, what piece of advice would you give them?
Ooh, I would say find those programs that Matt did. I mean, it's so hard, I think, but I wish I had known about some of those before I got out, but I just didn't know. And I didn't know that they were there, mm-hmm. you know, so it's not even like I knew what to even research.
Yeah.
So I wish I had done I guess I didn't even think there were programs like that. It just didn't even occur to me. Mm-hmm. So I think if I were to give anybody advice, I would say do some research on programs for transitioning military, and you will be surprised, I think, what you find. But it didn't even occur to me to look for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, too, because I got out in 2014 and you got out in 2015. Social media wasn't as big as it is now. So right. I feel like now I watch some of my friends who are retiring and I'm like, man, there's all kinds of resources out here. Everybody's talking about what they've done since they got out or what resources they used. And social media has been a huge networking tool. And we didn't have that. So, I mean, LinkedIn too, like that's a great platform for veterans, I think, but sorry. Anyways, Matt, what about you?
Yeah, I guess do all the programs I did. No, I would say that the last bit of it starts, it goes by so fast. So if you don't start early, it'll catch up with you quicker than you think it will. So mm-hmm. I know my big motivation was, you know, I had a wife and two kids who were dependent on me, and I would spend nights worrying, like, I don't have a job. Like, I'm 6 months out. I don't have a job. We're going to sleep in my car. Like, just ridiculous things, because no one's really hiring at 6 months out. So
yeah.
It's absurd to be worrying about those kind of things. So really, like, start early and find a mentor. So find, you know, no one is the first person to leave the military. Mm-hmm. It is a trail that has been blazed before. And when we're in the service, you know, when you show up to a ship, you don't go, I know what I'm doing, I'll take care of it. Right. You go talk to people who have done it before. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to do maintenance, you're not like, I'll just figure it out on the fly. What could go wrong?
Yeah. Thank you.
You know, yeah, exactly. So you have to treat the transition the same way. Like, find the people who have done it before, because you're bound to know at least one, right? So find mentors. And people hate the word mentor because it implies some sort of like formal relationship. So, okay, find old people who have gotten out of the military in the last 5 years. Speaking of other programs, so American Corporate Partners, ACP, is a place where you can find civilian mentors who can tell you how to get into your desired industry. That's another program I would recommend.
Oh, nice.
So what they do is they actually find you a mentor who's in the commercial world in your desired industry, if they can, and they match you up with them, and you meet with them once a month just to ask them questions about anything and everything. So that's a really cool one too. But my point is, like, find the people who have done it before and who have blazed the trail before you, and ask them tons of questions. Mm-hmm. So somebody said this to me one time. They were like, if you're worried about reaching out to someone because you're like, oh, they're too busy, oh, they're, you know, they won't respond to me. I guarantee you every veteran will answer your email. I have a great story about this. So when I came into the Navy, I came in through the nuclear program, right? And one of the things you do is you interview with the 4-star admiral in charge of the nuclear Navy.
Oh.
And he personally approves every person who comes into the nuclear Navy as an officer.
Oh, that's intense.
And so, it dates back to Admiral Rickover, who was a very interesting guy. So the admiral I interviewed with was Admiral Caldwell. And Admiral Caldwell, Admiral Donald. I always get the names wrong. Admiral Donald was who I interviewed with. And really smart guy, got out of the Navy a few years after I joined. But, you know, he basically approved me to join the Navy. And so when it came time to get out, I was looking around at companies I wanted to work for. And there was a company called NewScale. And so I had learned this trick where, hey, when you're on LinkedIn and you find a company you really want to work at, mm-hmm. search for people who work there now who previously worked in the military or worked in the Navy, right? Because you have that shared common connection. Mm-hmm. And so somehow Admiral Donald was on the board at NuScale, this company I wanted to work for.
Oh, nice.
And so I said, you know what? I'm going to take a shot. And so I messaged him on LinkedIn and I said, sir, I guarantee you don't remember who I am, but you were the admiral who approved me to come into the Navy. I really want to work for NuScale. Can you, like, do you have 5 minutes for me to ask you questions about, like, how you got there? And he responded and he said, absolutely. Here's the email for the guy you want to talk to about getting a job there.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And that's, how crazy is that? Like, a 4-star admiral had no issues giving me an email for a guy at the company, even though he, like, knew nothing about me other than he had said yes to me joining the Navy. And the thing is, every veteran who's out of the military is willing to give back to anyone who's still in the military. So when, you know, if you're transitioning and you're like, well, I don't know if I should email this guy, like, do it. Mm-hmm. Because think about it. If you're out of the military and somebody emails you out of the blue and says, hey, you have 5 minutes for me to ask you some questions, you're going to say yes.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So what makes you think that other person would not say yes? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I will calm down now and get off my high horse. But my whole point is, you know, just reach out to people. Like, there are people who've done it before. You don't have to do it alone.
Yeah, I think I've learned that a lot in doing this podcast, because it was kind of like, I call this podcast the COVID dream. My coworker, who's now the producer of the podcast, and I had kind of come up with this idea, and then it was finding people to interview. So similar to how I reached out on your link, I think it was your LinkedIn post, and I was like, oh man, I want to talk to you and your wife, because I read these stories and I want other veterans to be inspired by all types of people from all different backgrounds. You know, it's important that we don't leave out the officers who've transitioned out of the military, because their transition is different, but also the same in some aspects. So having you guys on, like, I reach out to all kinds of people all the time, because what's the worst they're going to say? No. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of my thought process on it. But I think, I've never thought of what you said about connecting with people through LinkedIn and asking other veterans. I think that's a really awesome tip to take with, for anybody who's listening, because the Navy's small. I mean, most of the military is small. So odds are you've served with somebody who's got some type of position somewhere that could benefit you. So that's cool. Well, I appreciate both of you coming on the show today. I've learned so much. Thank you for dealing with me being an hour late, because I forgot about time zones. I appreciate that. And
No problem.
But thank you so much for both of your stories. I think it's important that we hear from people who are dual military, because there's so much of that. And so having both of you have different transitions out was really cool to hear. So thank you very much.
Yeah, happy to be a part of this.
Yeah, this was great. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Well, you guys have a lovely evening, and I will get in touch with you when we get ready to make this live.
Alrighty.
All right. Thanks again. All right. Well, that was awesome. Like I was telling them, you know, it's cool to hear it from a different perspective of both the husband and wife going through transition and how it can be so different from everybody. And that's really why I love doing this podcast so much, because I have learned a lot, and I hope you as listeners have learned a lot. So thank you for listening to a Veterans Podcast today. To learn more about us, to hear previous episodes, or if you are interested in being on the show, you can find us at aveteranspodcast.com. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Wisconsin Veterans Network, a Wisconsin nonprofit operated by veterans and serving veterans in need. Till next time.